That's right. It is the Nerd and Tie Star Wars The Force Awakens special. A spoiler-filled hour of stupidity brought to you by myself, Trey Dorn, and the wondiferous, splendiferous, and omnipresent and on video, Nick Azumi.
It's that important. Oh, yeah.
And I just assaulted your ears with a terrible thing.
That was something. Sure was a thing.
So originally a third person was supposed to be with us for this episode, but due to technical difficulties, she was unable to join us. So for this special episode, where our last special episode, we literally threw as many people as we could at you. This special episode, we're going to throw as few people at you as possible, and you can be the judge at home as to which was a better experience.
So yeah, this will be just kind of a little one.
So for those of you who don't know, when we do our specials, this one for Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, woohoo, which just premiered, they are full of spoilers. 100% spoiler-filled.
Not for folks who haven't seen the movie yet, unless you're fine with getting it spoiled. Don't know why you'd want that, but...
Yeah, so if you have not seen Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, stop this podcast right now. Turn it off. Do not listen to it. Do not listen to it at all until you have watched the movie. Because, frankly, you want to do that. First,
you should be watching.
Go see the movie. Because, like, you're, like, one of five people who hasn't yet. And everyone at your work or place where you hang out or church or market where you're robbing people, all of them have seen it. So, you know, armed gunmen, put the podcast away. You also stop robbing people. That's bad.
Yeah, stop that, you jerk.
Yeah, but more importantly, holy shit, Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
We're going to have a special where I think this is going to be a really positive one, because I liked the hell out of this movie. I don't think I liked it as much as it seems like everyone else in the world seems to, but I liked it an awful lot.
Yeah, it's so let's talk about what happened here. So it's been a while since we did one of these specials. We got to get back in the groove. I enjoyed the movie a lot. Is it my favorite Star Wars movie? No, but it was an actual Star Wars movie. That was the whole thing. So when we went and saw the prequels years and years and years ago, I was a bit older than, say, Mr. Izumi here. Because I was an adult, and
I was 10 when Episode 1 came out.
I'm 9 years older than, so I was, like, you know, able to drive a car and had a job when Episode 1 came out. Episode 1 came out in the late 90s, and expecting more Star Wars, and then we got Episode 1, and then we got Episode 2, and then we got my least favorite, Episode 3. And so the dream of getting another Star Wars movie again that actually felt and looked like a Star Wars movie seemed very remote. But lo and behold, now that George Lucas is not driving the ship, it's actually been steered into the appropriate lane. As I will say, the one and most important thing that I have to say about the film is that it felt like a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's its greatest strength. In some ways, it felt a lot like a very specific Star Wars movie, which to me was its greatest weakness, because it somehow simultaneously...
Keep going.
No, it somehow simultaneously a sequel, but also kind of a remake of A New Hope, Like, it is a new, like, beat for beat, it's almost the same movie plot wise.
I think it's different, and I think that's actually part of the whole point, is that there's some moments in the film which are meant to be the symmetry of the series. I think actually that what I liked about this film is that you could feel the symmetry with the earlier movies without it having been directly stated. It's George Lucas tried to do this with the prequels, where he wanted, like, the structure of the two of the prequels and the original trilogy was supposed to be very similar, where, like, you're trying to fit following the same pattern. And but where Lucas tried to shoehorn in that symmetry, I felt that the symmetry in this movie felt very natural.
I agree.
And it's I mean, we've got a like, I enjoyed, first off, I enjoyed the main cast.
I also really liked all the new characters. I didn't think I was going to like everybody, but I did. Like, really. Like, Poe, he's a bit of an archetype, but I dug the crap out of him.
Well, Poe Dameron is barely a character in this movie. He's, like, really important to the plot. Poe Dameron you meet immediately. First off, okay, so let's talk about, like, let's go through the movie to start with. Like, first off, you start out the movie with Poe Dameron meeting a character who I don't know if they ever say his name on screen, but he's Max von Sydow, his character.
I had no idea who that was.
Okay, so here's the thing. It's I watched that movie, and Max von Sydow is actually kind of a big deal actor, and so I sat there going, like, was Max von Sydow ever in the original trilogy? Like, because he's just described as an old friend. He's got a name in the script because everybody in Star Wars has a name because they're going to make an action figure of everybody eventually. Like, that actually makes it really hard to look up who's playing what random character sometimes when it's people whose names you don't know, because it's like, great, I know he was, like, a guy at the thing, except they never said his name, and all he's credited, and he's wearing a mask, so I'm trying to figure out which of these Star Wars names the actor is on IMDb. But Max von Sydow is such a big name, like, I knew who Max von Sydow is. He's not in the original trilogy, but I spent, like, the whole because I've watched the movie twice now, and the whole first time I watched the movie, I was trying to think, like, was Max von Sydow in the original trilogy? Like, at some point, did he have, like, some...
I was wondering that whole time.
Like, is this a guy I'm supposed to know? Like, I know who the guy is. You know? But I... No, he's nobody. It's, but so... And so we get that whole opening moment. I love that opening with the Star Destroyer, because how do you do a Star Destroyer coming on screen that isn't the A New Hope Star Destroyer coming on screen? So
you
just,
know, I honestly thought that it looked like shadow puppets. Maybe with the theater I was at, it looked like a really cheesy shadow puppet in my theater.
Well, it's like, just a black shadow moving across the planet, but I liked it. I liked it a lot because it was an interesting way to bring a Star Destroyer on screen that wasn't the, like, traditional shot that's in A New Hope.
I appreciated the tension, but I didn't, when I saw it, the execution made me kind of giggle.
See, I thought it was, I was maybe still awed when I saw that. But, and so you go straight from this introduction of Poe Dameron, like, this whole situation to Finn, like, as a stormtrooper, like, with the, I love the little thing where they had the guy put the blood on the helmet so you could keep track of which one was Finn in that scene.
That was smart.
I do like the fact that stormtroopers in this new movie are, like, built. Like, they're bulkier people than the original. Like, you go back and watch the original trilogy and all the stormtroopers are, like, these skinny dudes. And
they're,
like,
also much more successful at, like, hitting things.
Yeah. Stormtroopers can actually hit shit. Although you will notice that the first shot that while escaping the Star Destroyer, the Finn's first shot misses when he's firing at the guns and has to hit it with the second shot. Or is that, I don't know. Anyways. And so I love the fact that you're dealing with, like, the stormtrooper on his first mission freaking out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was, like, the way that they introduced Finn is great, and the way that they have him run as a character continues to make sense, because he is your typical plucky hero who's faced with something bigger than him and has to figure his way through it, and he's not Superman. He's just got to, you know, cope like a regular person. Right. And I loved that.
Right. And well, and I'll talk about this more when we talk about Rey, but what I love about Finn's introduction is that it's all visual. It's all performance. It's never like him like going on a 10-minute like
I better give exposition about my backstory now.
Right. It's clearly like even through that armor you can see the physical like freak out. And so I think that like that in itself, John Boyega's performance through that armor is just really like you can see that change. And also in that opening scene, we get Kylo Ren, who comes like holds a blaster shot in the air.
I loved that. That was great. Ridiculous and awesome.
Well, because it's really obvious that blasters are not lasers because you can see the shots moving. So that means that if the Force can, like, if they can stop an object, they can stop a blaster shot, you know? You know, because blasters are still just, like, those shots are still, like, bolts of something. So, yeah, it's, I love, and then Poe Dameron's, like, line of, so, are you supposed to talk or do I talk? Like, his joke about who's supposed to talk first, because it is that moment in every movie where, like, because they are just sitting there and no one's saying anything. and so I love that, like, what I love about this movie is that it, in many ways, would pokes fun at the tropes without feeling like it's mocking them. Like,
which the original movies did a lot of.
Yeah. It's, well, especially through Han Solo.
But willingness to bring levity to what is, at, well, you know, at first glance, such a ridiculous situation is important.
Yeah.
Especially when you're doing a movie like this.
Yeah, and so I love like that scene gave us both kind of like really who Poe Dameron is, who Kylo Ren is, and who Finn is without really any sort of exposition. Like, you know everything about these guys' personalities, like, just in that moment.
Through their actions, which Yeah,
and
movies are a visual medium.
Yeah, now
show, don't tell.
No, but my favorite thing is when you talk about show and tell is when we meet our next main character, and that's Rey. And it's and I really only picked up on this the second time when we meet Rey and she's scavenging, and they cut to Rey scavenging in the abandoned crash Star Destroyer. There's a sequence of scenes of her climbing through it, scavenging, loading up her speeder, driving back to town, cashing it in, getting back to her overturned AT-AT and marking the wall to show that she's been waiting, slumping down with the food and putting on the rebellion helmet. And throughout that entire set of scenes, she has said no dialogue. Even when she talks to the guy who she cashes in the food, he says a line, but she says nothing. And you learn everything you need to know about that character. The fact that, you know, that everything you need to know about her. You find out in, like, that she's a survivor, that she's, like, gone through all the stuff, that she's alone. And then, like, actually,
but she's not out of hope. There's still some whimsy there. Like,
right,
when she uses the bit of scrap as a sled, there's still a little bit of whimsy.
Right.
And admittedly, I when I watched that scene, I was also kind of thinking this is almost shot for shot from Nausicaä Valley of the Wind. But, you know, if you're going to steal from the best, right?
Yeah, I was going to say. And then actually her first three lines of dialogue are not in English.
Mm.
It's her fourth line when she starts talking to BB-8 that she actually speaks in English to him. And so it's this whole thing where, like, you learn everything about this character from what she's doing and what she looks like. And that is one thing George Lucas could never frickin' do. Like, it's funny. He did it in A New Hope. It's A New Hope. You get, like, when you learn the most about Luke Skywalker, I always feel in the opening parts of A New Hope, where you learn the most about him. It's not in any scene where he speaks. It is him standing, staring at the two setting suns, saying nothing with just the musical score, because that tells you everything about his desire to go out into this world.
I agree.
Just like you learn everything about Daisy's character, Ren, like Rey, not Ren, Rey. Rey. Very different. You learn everything about Rey just through these series of shots of her being a survivor, about her still, like... But you also know that she's dreaming about the rebellion, like the fact that she's putting on the rebel helmet and, like, doing all that stuff. And so that's I really like that entire sequence. It's Rey's first and last scenes in the movie are done in total dialogue free. Both her her opening scene and her closing scene of the film are done without dialogue entirely.
The very ending of the movie is actually my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Yeah.
I love the fact that there's no dialogue. I love the physical performances from both Rey and, of course, from Luke.
Yeah. Okay. Can I point out something about
spoiling the hell out of it? But
well,
yeah.
No. It's if again, you have
already
if,
said you were going.
If to. We're yeah, what I love about that scene with Luke Skywalker is really, if you think about it, Luke had to have seen the Millennium Falcon land, right? Right. Because it landed mm-hmm. just off the island.
You know that he just went to stand there to so that he would have a dramatic turnaround.
Right, because he knows where the stairs are. Because she took the stairs up. He knows someone's coming up the stairs, and he said, I'm going to stand with my back to them. Because I'm a Skywalker, and we are fucking obsessed with drama and theater.
It's true, but it works.
My father was. Really... I was. My sister was. I mean, honestly, you know, half of Leia's stuff is, you know, and you are. And Kylo Ren is obsessed with drama, and he's a descendant of the Skywalker. So, you know. So.
Yeah.
Dude.
No. Loved it. I absolutely love that ending scene.
Yeah, but to go back to, like, the beginning, it's, so, you know, it's, the escape is great. I love that escape with Poe Dameron and Finn. As Poe, I love the fact that Finn, like, is always trying to, like, cover up and lie, and then would, like, Poe Dameron sees through it immediately, that he knows he figures out Finn wants to escape and just needs a pilot.
The interplay between them was so great because it was natural.
Yeah.
It was bantery, but it didn't feel like forced banter.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And the escape is nice and action-packed while still funny. Like, you know.
I have never loved TIE Fighters as much as I do right now.
I know.
This movie made me think TIE Fighters are just the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. Well, and they sounded
even
right.
The new sound mixing for the scream, like it's just different enough, but I think it's a better difference. It's like, wow, this is an awesome sound coming from them. The look is great. It just, they made the TIE Fighter cooler than it's ever been, which is saying a lot because TIE Fighters were always cool.
I know. It's, and some people will complain that, the TIE Fighter had atmosphere. But first off, the only reason you think TIE Fighters don't have an atmosphere in them is because of the expanded universe, which only counts when we want it to count now. So, not really.
The expanded universe, i.e. that thing that Nick doesn't care about except in Crimson Empire.
Hey, I loved the Heir to the Empire trilogy.
And even that I don't think of as canon. That's just a comic book I like.
Oh, yeah. No, it still exists. It's just a separate continuity. But also, these are new TIE Fighters because they're two-person TIE Fighters, so whatever. Like,
mm-hmm. Who cares?
Yeah. But so, other people have told me, well, they can't go in atmosphere. I'm like, again, the only reason you think a TIE Fighter can't go into the atmosphere is because of the extended universe. To go back to it, so the TIE Fighter crashes, Poe's supposedly dead. What I love is, okay, so there's this great part. One of my favorite things about this movie is that whenever someone goes to rescue Rey, she's either gotten out of it entirely or is, like, halfway out already. Mm-hmm. And it's Finn runs to try to rescue Rey, and she ends up, like, he just, like, ends up stopping because, like, she has completely, like, saved herself from the guys trying to mug her. And... because, of course, she has. She's been living on this planet since she was 5, and she's clearly, like, at least, like, 20, if not older.
And it also establishes that she has previous experience wielding a melee weapon, which comes into play later in the film.
It's very important.
It's subtle about it.
Yeah.
It's not like, in your face, wow, you're really good with a melee weapon. I wonder what you would be like with a sword. You know, you don't have someone like pointing it out because maybe the audience is too stupid to understand. Like,
no, exactly. Exactly. And so there's, you know, that's, I love that. And it's, I love the fact that they start chasing down Finn because he's like
wearing
post jacket. But what I love is that, what I love about Finn is that he's so like full of bullshit at every turn. Like, oh, so you're with the Resistance? Yes, yes, I am. This is what people with the Resistance look like. Well, some of us. Others look different. Like, that whole scene, like, of, like, he's clearly trying to impress this girl. First off, is so normal and great. And I love, it's, like, I think the movie does a fantastic job just, like, of him trying to, like, bluff his way through and being so bad at it.
No, it really works. It really does. So I'm trying to think. I see. Do we want to continue through the story and like in order, or like because now I'm thinking about characters, and I really did like how most of the characters were handled. There was only one new character who I was horribly disappointed by.
Who were you disappointed by?
Captain Phasma. I was annoyed because so much of the pre-production stuff was, oh yeah, this is it. This is our first female villain in Star Wars. Get hyped. And she's a Boba Fett. And for those of you who don't know me, that's not a compliment.
Well,
Boba Fett is any character or robot or something that looks really cool and doesn't actually do anything to back up how cool they look. And that's what they did with Phasma. Well, she looked awesome, but then she gets tackled by a Wookiee, and that's pretty much her entire bit.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It's I liked Captain Phasma, but I also ignored the hype about her. I think she's perfectly fine if you just look at the movie and ignore like the pre-hype.
I hope that she's not actually trash compacted.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because she seemed pretty cool. I would like to see her actually do things, but as of right now,
yeah.
She's a Boba Fett.
Yeah, I will say I like the fact that randomly stormtroopers and rebel pilots were women.
Yeah. But you've got a little bit of the I was saying this to Raina, and I said this in our own before and after recording, but I'm gonna share this with you here. I like that the First Order are very Gamergate-y about how they handle diversity. Because when you look at the Resistance, they got men and women and black guys and fish guys. And they're just, everybody's all out and in the open. And in the First Order, it's okay to be different so long as different isn't part of your identity.
It's okay to be different as long as you're wearing your helmet.
Yeah, exactly. It's okay to be long as no one can tell that you're different.
Yeah.
Which is...
To be fair, it's because the First Order are space Nazis, and so...
Well, yeah.
Because the Empire was always the space Nazis. Their uniforms are based off of German uniforms. They are space Nazis.
They're called stormtroopers. I mean, like, if you look at any movie from the 40s, just the phrase stormtrooper was synonymous with Nazis.
Yeah.
So...
But okay, so going into the movie more, I will say that the next main introduction was Han Solo and Chewbacca's introduction into the movie, and I felt that was the most unnatural feeling introduction in the entire film.
Yeah, I can kind of see that.
Don't get me wrong, like I liked this movie a lot, but like I was like, oh really? Han Solo and Chewbacca just happened to show up.
I about to say you. You realize I'm the last person who's going to criticize people on liking a movie but still picking it apart, right?
Well, right. But... I'm like, it, like, especially since you're going to, like, the Resistance. Like, the whole point of the movie is you're going to the Resistance. Why did we need to, like, introduce the characters of just, like, oh, we haven't seen the Falcon in, like, a decade, but we found it now that our heroes are on it. Mm-hmm. Like, and I get it, it's because the ship hasn't been in space.
Right.
But, like, it's a big universe. It's a big galaxy. Well, except in this movie where it's a small galaxy. And I'll talk about that in a moment, too. But, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Like, there's... I don't know. It's... Everything is so... like, that convenience bothered me for, like, 5 seconds. And then I said, oh, who cares? Han Solo's here.
I'm with you.
I was like, oh, that's convenient. But hey, look, Han Solo. Like, you
yeah,
know.
On the other hand, the way Harrison Ford played the older version of Han was great.
I love both Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher
that.
In this
I
movie.
I enjoyed that very, very much.
Yeah. So let's talk about Kylo Ren.
This, okay, yeah. I liked Kylo Ren a lot. I'm going to be honest. I think this, see, what I like about Kylo Ren is that ever since the original trilogy, when you're making another Star Wars movie, you're stuck with the fact that the original movies had Darth Vader, who is probably the greatest movie villain of all time. So every movie has their wannabe Darth Vader. But this movie, they had the wannabe Darth Vader literally be a wannabe Darth Vader. And that's why he works. He worships ground Vader walks on, but he's also this ball of adolescent rage that is this close to exploding at any given second. I loved that.
This is what Anakin should have been in episode 3.
Yes.
From the first shot of the movie. Like, that's actually what I when I came to think of it, I was like, this feels like Vader 20 years before episode 4.
Mm.
And so this is what he should have been like in episode 3, instead of the, like, good Jedi to evil, like, halfway through the movie, no good reason. Like, this is who he should have been from shot one, because Kylo Ren is, you know, Ben, I don't know if his last name would have been Organa or Solo, because apparently Leia kept her name in the new movie universe. So, but when Ben decided to become a Knight of Ren or whatever, and became Kylo Ren, he's still struggling with the light side. And that's actually, like, I kind of saw, like, the instant the conversation started, I was like, oh, okay, Kylo Ren's going to kill Han Solo now.
I'll go back to that.
But I was going to say, the whole dialogue about, like, he's feeling torn because he's tried to embrace the dark side, but keeps feeling the pull from the light. And so, like, his whole dialogue with Han Solo on the bridge is all about, like, the pain that he wants to be rid of is the light side.
Mm-hmm.
Is the guilt. And so that should have been Anakin in episode 3, where he's embracing the dark side but still feels the pull of the light, and then decides to embrace the dark side by the end of the movie. Like, that is the point the character needed to be in that movie, and which I'm happy they gave us a character who was at that point in this one.
Well, see, that scene for me with Ren's patricide scene, I kind of saw it come, because again, that was the point at that point in the movie, that was where I was starting to feel that whole, this is beat for beat very similar to New Hope. And at that point I'm like, oh wow, okay, music drops out, older mentor figure sees familiar person in black cloak, yep, Han's gonna get Obi-Wan.
Before
he even stepped on the bridge, I'm like, yep, Han's getting Obi-Wan. It's happening. He's gonna get Obi-Wan by Obi-Wan's namesake.
Yeah. Yeah, and I liked that symmetry, because I mean, I think the idea
I'm not saying it didn't work. Don't get me wrong. I just saw it coming.
But it happened in episode 1 when Qui-Gon died. It happened in episode 4 when Ben Kenobi died. It's the idea is that your main protagonist really the father figure of that of one of your main protagonists is going to die in the first chapter of a trilogy.
Except in episode 1 it didn't work, because episode 1 doesn't have a protagonist.
Well, no, Anakin. Not Anakin. Fuck Anakin. I mean, Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan.
Well, yeah, but
Obi-Wan's
barely an active agent in that movie.
I refuse to accept that any character other than Obi-Wan Kenobi is the main character of the prequels, because he was the only character who worked in the entirety of the prequels. And so I have to believe, as the only character who works in the entirety of a set of movies, that he has to be the protagonist.
do yourself a favor and later watch. There's a YouTube series called "What If the Prequels Were Good," and it's this guy thinking about how to rework the prequels to focus squarely on Obi-Wan to make them better movies. And actually, he has they're really good videos.
Or they could have just made Lucas's original treatment of the first three episodes that starts with an adult Anakin.
Yeah, because we can't get too much out of that.
we could talk about all what could have been. I'm just saying that.
I think it worked here, though. Yeah. I'm even going to say something. Back when we first saw the trailer, I made fun of Kylo Ren's lightsaber. And for the record, I still think the little nubbies coming off the end are stupid.
They're
effective.
Because
in order for a cross guard to work, you need to have a right angle. And all you would get if you use that as a cross guard would be to cut off the end of a lightsaber. I still think that's stupid. But the blade is distorted. The blade is ridiculous. And it's clearly it is as messed up and unhoned as Ren is.
Yeah.
And because of that, I like it. It is a visual symbol of how screwed up he is as a character.
He is more likely to take it out on a console than a person working for him, though. People bring news to him and survive, which is important.
This is true, but
better management than Vader.
I liked that. I liked that he has that whole... I like that he has that. I'm pretending to be calm all the time. I'm so calm. As soon as anyone leaves the room, though, he starts breaking everything, and I love that.
I love a shot where the two stormtroopers start coming down the hallway and then turn around.
Yeah, it was great.
Nope.
Yeah, that was really funny. I really liked that scene.
Yeah, it's there's so much stuff. It's so good. It's so good. Again, I go back to the fact that I loved the moment where Rey has her Force vision that draws her to the light, with the lightsaber, and you can hear Yoda and Ben Kenobi's voices, and apparently it's both Ewan McGregor and Alec Guinness's voice saying the line, because they took a line of Alec Guinness saying "afraid" and cut it down to Rey, and. And so it's Alec Guinness saying Rey's name. And a sound editor did it and then played it for J.J. Abrams, without, telling him he was going to do it. So,
that's awesome.
And yeah, and so, I love there's so many little things. You find out when, Kylo Ren is interrogating Rey that, that he talks about an endless ocean and an island and all that. And it's, he's talking about he's pulling out of her mind that she's been having visions about the island where Luke Skywalker is.
I didn't pick up on that because I need to watch see if I watched the second time that would have clicked with me, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He pulls out that she's been dreaming of this island. And so I love lots of things. I love Rey's reaction to being at a place with foliage for the first time in her adult life.
My favorite part of the interrogation scene is when Rey pushes back and that Ren's immediate reaction is, "I'm going to go tell Snoke."
Yeah, it's all right. So let's talk about Snoke.
Let us. That was one of the things I didn't think worked.
So he's totally Darth Plagueis, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I thought he looked like a crappy CG Voldemort.
So first off, I was so happy when they revealed that was a hologram.
Oh, yeah.
No, I just breathed a sigh of relief.
Because as I'm seeing that, I'm like, this looks terrible. This looks stupid. I was really into this until this. Oh, thank God it's a hologram.
It's a hologram.
Oh, thank God.
He's just projecting himself giant. Okay, good. He's not a giant.
Probably just a decrepit old man. Oh, thank God.
Yeah, because... In Empire, cool. The Emperor projects himself as a giant head to Vader, so I'm like, okay.
Right. So it's, we have a precedent for it, but during
the scene, I was just terrified.
I was like, dear God, that looks terrible.
Yeah. So it's, So Snoke. Okay, so this is a fan theory. Like they're obviously trying to leave big open questions for the rest of the trilogy, because you know, like just like Han Solo knew something about Rey that we didn't find out, because Han Solo and Maz were talking about Rey, and then we cut away to Finn and Rey. There's something about her that they haven't revealed, and they're very intentionally only giving her a first name. But with Darth Plagueis, the reason why Darth Plagueis is a current fan theory. Now, for those of you who don't know, Darth Plagueis was a Sith Lord who trained Palpatine, Darth Sidious. But we always know him as Palpatine, even though he's Darth Sidious, because that was his Sith name that he actually did have one. Plagueis trained Palpatine. He was said to, in episode 3, he tells Anakin that Plagueis had the power to create life and resurrect the dead. And it is implied that Plagueis is responsible for Anakin's birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that Anakin, now while it's also implied that Plagueis is dead, it's never overtly stated. But
doesn't Sidious say that his apprentice killed him? I thought it was
yes, but if Plagueis had the power to restore life, he may have survived what Palpatine believed.
Right.
And the reason why I like this theory is because it would mean that the villain in this trilogy is responsible for setting up all the actions of the whole series.
Okay, yeah. That'd be cool.
That would be cool to me, because that would make him a character responsible for stuff that's happened in the first. It's like the Darth Jar Jar theory, only without Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, because rather than fixing Jar Jar, I would rather just have no Jar Jar.
Right.
Personally.
Misa, think you're dead. No,
Misa, think you're really racist.
Yeah, so that's why it's like I hope we find out more stuff about Snoke, and I hope it ends up being something somehow linked. I just hope he's not Palpatine directly.
I do too. I hope he's not Palpatine directly, and I hope to God he looks better than what he looked like in this movie. Not physically better. I'm fine with him being, you know, old and shriveled and stuff. I just don't want him to be a CG monstrosity.
He will be. I think he's tiny.
Oh, I think he's really little. Yeah.
Yeah, I no, think I, he's like four. I think he's like Yoda sized.
Oh wow, maybe,
that's my theory.
Now that you mention it,
I was looking at the proportion of the head to the shoulders and the hands, and I'm betting he's like Yoda height.
Okay, I could go with that theory.
Yeah. But so, I like Kylo Ren's kind of like reverse Luke.
Mm.
And he's gonna.
Yeah, I noticed that too, because we've seen people becoming Jedi, and seeing Anakin turn into Vader was just. It
disappointing. Yeah.
Yeah. But this, yeah, I liked this idea of we've seen Luke struggle with, I don't want the dark side to overtake me, but it's so weird and so interesting seeing someone like, I don't want to feel the light anymore.
Yeah.
It's so upsetting, but it's so interesting at the same time.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I think that, you know, even though it was in. So here is an ongoing issue I have with J.J. Abrams.
Okay.
J.J. Abrams doesn't understand scale in space.
Okay. Yeah, no, I agree.
So.
I think I know what you're getting at.
In the movie, there is only one explanation for a certain set of sequences that we see visually, and that is the planet that Han takes Rey and Finn to, where Maz is, you know. Where Maz's base is set up or whatever, where like her bar and all that stuff. The only explanation that makes any sense is that it's in the same solar system as like the core of the Republic. And now I understand like the Republic having five planets that close together seem to make no sense gravitationally.
Yeah.
Cause those were all really big on screen together, but maybe it was just a bad lens. And true, to be fair, they are further, but it is rather convenient that they're all on the same side of the sun at once.
I'll say, you know what distracted me more about that scene than the scale of it? I love that you had General Hux give his Nazi speech, and then he's like, all right, we got a planet-sized laser beam. Everybody look directly at it.
Well, okay, so...
Now, the stormtroopers have visors, but he himself has no excuse. Dude...
That is so bright. Well, first off, like, it's not a laser. It is... The only way that weapon makes sense is that if it somehow creates, like, a hyperspace pocket as it fires.
Yes.
And that's fine, because they have hyperspace. You know, if you're going to reach more than one solar system, like, immediately... If your weapon's traveling faster than the speed of light between interstellar space, fine. Yeah, you can sell me on that. That actually seems to be the best way to make a planet-killing weapon. Shoot it from another solar system. But it means that, like, but Han Solo and, like, all these guys witness it from the ground, and you can see it hit the five different points. And that means that, first off, they had to have been witnessing it, like, a half hour later. In the timeline, because again, light, those explosions, the visions of visuals of that are still traveling at the speed of light. Thank you very much. So those planets were already blown up by the time they saw it. And also, did you notice that Martha Jones died on one of those planets?
No. Freeman was one of the people. Freeman, no.
But they can see it all, which means that, like, they're in the same solar system. Why would... Like, that means, like, Han is not going out of the way. He's like, let's go to literally a planet in the most busy solar system in the entirety of the Republic.
Well, and the explosions look like they're only taking place, like, a few hundred miles above ground. They don't look that far off.
Well, they are full planets, and I think they're small enough where it's like, okay, like... But maybe they're all moons around a gas giant, and, like, you know, but that means they're, like, also on another moon of that gas giant, which means there's going to be massive gravitational impact on that one surviving planet that was unimportant enough to get blown up.
This is Star Wars. Like, Star Wars is the least scientific science.
But J.J. Abrams did this in Star Trek, and they had to retcon it. In 2009 Star Trek... In Kirk's vision from Spock, Spock witnesses Vulcan blowing up from the ice planet, except the ice planet's supposed to be in a completely different fucking solar system. So how did he see that? So, and they retconned it saying, well, it's since he knew it was happening, it's how big he felt, because it is just a vision from Spock's brain. And that works in Star, but I'm like, no, it's a plot point. They're witnessing this. So that was pretty... Great. I will say that, as Kevin Smith pointed out, this movie did answer the question from Clerks, do you think a stormtrooper knows how to install a toilet main? Yes.
Yes,
Finn does.
I even said, I'm willing to bet that was an overt Clerks reference. It had to have.
He worked in sanitation, but that's also why Finn knows exactly where the garbage chute is and the trash compactor is. That's a good trash compactor joke. They didn't show a trash compactor. They just had Han Solo ask about one.
Mm-hmm. I still hope they didn't kill Phasma.
I'm sure she got out. That the planet took long enough to blow up. I will say, okay, so let's talk about the Starkiller base end scenes. Like, I mean, we know it's ridiculous to have another planet-killing weapon, but it's Star Wars. The EU is full of it, so it's not like the expanded universe is full of planet-destroying weapons also. So, like, from the Sun Dagger to Darksaber to, like, whatever. So...
It ties into something else that I wanted to, that also ties into the earlier scene. I loved the X-Wing cavalry. Like, the first time we get to see the X-Wings all flying in formation, that was great. And it was fun seeing them again fighting the Starkiller, but just, I loved the X-Wing cavalry. It was a great entrance. It was a great battle scene that followed.
I will say, out of the X-Wing fighters, we have, besides Greg Grunberg's mandatory cameo in a J.J. Abrams work, it's nice to see a fat guy with a beard survive a planet-killing weapon battle.
It was good.
We had Nine Numb in there. With, obviously, it's a new actor to suit because the original actor died, but it's the same voice, So there's the voice of Night Gnome has two acting credits on IMDb, and they are Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens.
Good.
Because it's a standard rule of science fiction where all races are longer lived than humans. I loved Admiral Ackbar being there.
Yeah, I was happy to see Ackbar and his catfish whiskers that he's grown.
Yeah, I love Chewbacca's gray hair also. That it's not apparent from the front, but it is from the back.
Mm-hmm.
I love the scene where
I like that Chewbacca's a ladies' man. All the
I like
all
Chewbacca.
The ladies are all about Chewbacca.
I like Chewbacca like attempting to like with the doctor, like when he's like getting repaired. Oh, that must have been very hard for you. Like it was the most like Chewbacca's gotten to have out of like character. Like oh my god, like that scene was just great. Because it's like, you know what? You know who gets ignored all the time, but it's really important? Chewbacca.
You, like, you mean the guy who didn't get a medal at that big ceremony at the end of New Hope?
It was the co-pilot.
I always assume, well, you know, when Chewie screams at the end of New Hope, it's actually him going, what the hell?
Yeah, it's
like, Luke and Han get a medal, and then Chewie, what the boo?
Yeah, it's, I mean... This movie had such great little moments, like when Ray talked James Bond out of his blaster. Because yes, for those of you at home, Daniel Craig played the stormtrooper who Ray Jedi mind tricked.
That was awesome.
Like, there's so much little stuff in here. It's oh my god! Like, so from Han Solo's death to the like, I do love the movie where Finn and Solo are talking to each other, and if you look really carefully in the background of the first shot, you can see Rey out of focus climbing out mm-hmm. of the pod, and then like like Finn not catching on to Han Solo telling him to look behind him is so great. Also Han Solo calling Finn big deal.
Yeah, that was good. Often when it comes to these specials, my controversial opinions are the things that I don't like that everyone else seemed to like. I think my controversial opinion on this one is there's something I loved that I don't know if everyone else loves as much as I do. I love the final lightsaber battle in this movie.
Oh, that was great!
It actually is probably my favorite lightsaber battle in the entire series because the stakes are there. I cared about the characters. It was choreographed well, but it wasn't over choreographed. It wasn't that prequel crap. Characters right. were getting hurt. They were actually breaking a sweat.
Well, the problem with the prequels is that the blades are almost all CGI in the prequels, and so people could just wave a blade anywhere. And
but even when they weren't, like, it was like Anakin and Obi-Wan's duel in episode 3 is ridiculous because it goes on forever and neither of them are sweating or injured or acting like this is a...
And it makes no sense.
Uh-huh.
I have the high ground. Makes no sense. Like, yeah, you have the high ground, which means your legs are easier to hit while I only have to defend this little area. Right, time for me to cut your leg off. Like...
Did you see how It Should Have Ended did in their cartoon about that?
No.
Force lava. It's just Anakin splashing lava at him.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Like, there's like, force but lava. I'll tell you, as like, in my experience, if you got like high ground makes sense if you're using a ranged weapon because you can fire further than the guy on the low ground. Like, that's when high ground right. becomes advantageous. In a melee combat fight, it's actually disadvantage. It's a disadvantage because their main swinging area is an area that's harder for you to block. Like, okay, so, but let's not talk about episode 3, because that is...
And, like, I know a lot of people knock this lightsaber battle, because it's like, well, Rey's too much of a Mary Sue. It wouldn't make sense, and how could she beat a guy with more experience?
Because he got shot factors. With a bowcaster!
I was about to say, yeah, firstly, Ren was, you hit it right on the head, Trey. He got shot in the kidney, and he's hitting him... to make his legs move, so he's at a major disadvantage.
Yeah, okay,
for
so first off, we know that Rey is an experienced melee fighter with their staff from the beginning, and so, you know,
mm-hmm.
Two, John Boyega's had a whole fight with Ren, and while he's lost, he has like an experienced like physical fighter has worn him out and he's been shot, and that's when Rey picks up the lightsaber.
And also, Rey does spend the first half of the fight retreating. Like, it's not like she's automatically good at it.
Right.
Part of it, yeah, she spends a good chunk of the fight running away.
But I'll tell you,
I love that duel.
I will 100% of the time beat a skilled duelist if I shoot him in the kidney first. I mean, I'm just saying, I will always win that fight. Like, if I get to shoot the guy in the kidney first with a gun, I'm going to win the sword fight. Oh, wait, I'm going to shoot the guy with a gun and then make him fight a different soldier first.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to win that fight, and I'm pretty terrible. I do.
That
I will.
That fight made perfect sense. And again, just it was shot really well too. It looked so good.
Well, first off, they now are using lightsabers that actually emit light on set, which is why you get this beautiful shot of John Boyega's face when he turns on the lightsaber, and when Daisy Ridder turns on, is it Ridley or Ryder?
I don't remember. I don't actually remember her name. I feel bad because Rey is probably my favorite of the new characters.
Oh my god, no, she's my favorite character out of. Daisy Ridley, sorry. Daisy Ridley, I would like, by far, she's my favorite character in the new series. I am so signed up to watch another two movies with her as a main character.
Since I'm on board. It looks like she's going to be the main Jedi, yeah.
Yeah, no,
totally.
I am 100% on board.
If they want to make John Boyega a Jedi too, I'm good with that too.
Yeah,
like if they're
whatever.
Both Jedi, yeah. Good,
I want Finn around, but Rey's the one. Like, I want to watch. Well, first off, I like watching Rey and Finn because Finn is the comic relief, and then Rey is just awesomeness. And yeah, but what I loved about that lightsaber duel is that they were at the point where, like, I was like, well, she's either gonna have to kill him or take him captive. Where did this fight get? Oh, the ground's literally gonna open up between them. That is literally the only way to get out of this fight with both characters being important. And it makes sense in the scene because the planet's breaking up
and
gonna blow up.
But it makes sense in this universe where there is the Force, this religious, this spiritual, like non. It's not even an entity, but it is a presence that is separating them because the time is not now. I'm fine with it.
You know what? I have explained midichlorians, and I think it's fine. Correlation, not causation. Midichlorians are an indication of the Force, not a not the cause of the Force. That's what I'm saying.
I'm happier without them, but I'm okay with that explanation.
Well, you know, it's like if you want to test for deadly bacteria in a river supply, you actually usually just test for fecal coliform bacteria. Fecal coliform bacteria is not deadly, but it's indicative that lots of bacteria is blooming, and so that way you don't have to test for all the deadly bacterias.
Mm.
And I got to say fecal coliform bacteria in a podcast about Star Wars.
You know what we haven't mentioned really much of yet that I do feel is worth giving a shout out to?
What?
BB-8.
Oh, BB-8.
I like BB-8 a lot.
Oh my god, I love BB-8.
He purrs.
I wish I was cool. Yeah, and it was like Ben Silverton and Bill Hader who designed the voice. Like they didn't like a different couple of guys like did the actual performance because it's like a digitized voice like pitched up and stuff. But like John Ralphio from Parks and Rec and Bill Hader. Like, oh my god. But BB-8 is so much personality in just like a little thing on a sphere.
I was so worried
so much
that
personality.
Like, it's like, okay, so is he going to be a stand-in for R2? No, he's very much his own character.
Yeah.
I loved it. The visually he works, character-wise, you got a lot out of little guy. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him too.
He's all practical.
Yes, thank God.
You know, it's obviously like whenever something comes out of BB-8 that it's, you know, a stationary model that they're, you know, manipulating stuff versus the moving BB-8, which is a, you know, you can't have stuff pop out of that.
Right.
But I love the little thumbs up with the lighter. Like that was great.
Really good. He had such great interactions with the other characters, and no, BB-8 worked. BB-8 worked great. And that was another one of those things in the trailer where I'm like, ah, that looks like a toy. And I'm like, no, he's so much more. He's actually a full-on...
Yeah.
There are some Star Wars characters that I just see as, well, that's there to sell action figures. Like, General Grievous is an action figure.
C-3PO having a red arm is an action figure. I mean, it's literally an act. Like, C-3PO with a red arm was done to sell action figures. Like, he makes a little comment, but he gets his gold arm back by the end of the movie, which means the next movie they can sell the gold-armed C-3PO again as the new action figure. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh my god, they just made a variant action figure character because they could.
It's why the Avengers change their costume every movie, even when the movie is not that long apart.
Yeah. So I will say, like, one of my favorite things was that I don't know about the theater you saw it in, but in the theater I saw it in, X-Men Apocalypse trailer was before the movie.
Yeah, same.
Which is really strange to watch, to go straight from that to watching, because it's Oscar Isaac playing Apocalypse.
Right, right.
To then go watch him play Poe Dameron immediately afterwards. It's the same guy.
That was weird, yeah.
It was especially weird to watch it immediately following the Gods of Egypt trailer, where I was like, oh, look, I got to see a Marvel movie trailer. We got Civil War, followed by Gods of Egypt, followed by Apocalypse in my theater. So I got to watch Marvel Heroes, Terrible Egyptian Gods, and then Terrible Egyptian God Marvel Heroes.
In my theater, I got Star Trek Beyond. I got X-Men, I got Captain America, and I got Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Oh, man, I wish I'd gotten Fantastic Beasts and Star Trek.
Yeah, those were fun. I'm pretty excited for Fantastic Beasts. That looks pretty good.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer because we posted it to Nerd and Tie.
Right, right. So go to nerdandtie.com. It's fun.
Yeah, but I wanted to see that Star Trek trailer on screen because the one thing I want to see is, like, the one good thing about that Star Trek trailer is that it looks like it would be an awesome thing to see on screen.
It looked better on a big screen than it did watching it on the tablet. I'll say that much.
Yeah, well, and the whole thing is, you know, the Star Trek Beyond, not to talk too much about that, but, you know, we're talking about a trailer that Simon Pegg was very disappointed. That was the trailer. And even Justin Lin, who had to approve the trailer, was like, yeah, it's not really representative of the movie at all. And he did roll the eyes himself when the bike jump got put into it. He, like, literally, his quote was, did they have to put in the bike jump? Although, you know, the bike jump is the new unnecessary somersault.
Fingers.
What? Okay, so the only reason why there's not ridiculous action pieces in the original Star Trek movies is because all the actors were too old.
Yes.
Because all that ridiculous action was in the original series, just on a 60s TV budget.
It's true. No, it's true.
Yeah. Kirk got in fistfights constantly and was blowing. Like, they would have been blown up, like, if they could have afforded it, they would have blown up the Vasquez Rocks, if they could have. Just like, yeah. But
I know
that's too much Trek. I love Maz. I love all the characters, like, who we haven't talked about, like Maz. Was great.
She was awesome.
I loved her. I loved so much stuff. I love Simon Pegg's performance as Ulot, whatever, the guy running the junk thing.
That was Simon Pegg. Wow.
Yeah, that was a voice pitched Simon Pegg.
Wow, cool.
Yeah,
I didn't know that was him.
Yeah. It's his voice was pitched and he had a CGI head, but that was him. I love so much stuff in this movie. Like, it's like, it was imperfect. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't Empire, but I thought it did a better job of being A New Hope than A New Hope did. And,
I wouldn't go that far, but I did really like it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I put it on the same level as A New Hope. I think I liked it better than Jedi. See, when you talk about, like, the original trilogy, I kind of, like, flip-flop on whether I like... I like, okay, so I put it as better than Special Edition Jedi, and maybe not quite as good as Original Edition Jedi.
That's fair. Like, I know you've said before that you tend to like Original Edition Jedi more than Original Edition.
Because there's not a happy musical number in the middle of the scene where Jabba kills a sex slave.
Yeah, that.
Like, here's the scene that, like, I mean, because that's the whole thing, is that, like, Lucas did not direct Jedi. He didn't. Yeah.
He didn't direct Empire either, so he really has no right to F with them.
But Empire he barely messed with. Empire he mostly added special effects. Jedi, he introduced Jedi Rocks, which took this scene, which is all part of this, like, building griminess that is Jabba's palace, and trying to build who this character is by showing you stuff, and inserts this random musical number. The great thing about the original song is that Sais Noodles, like, and all that stuff, is never singing directly at camera. She's singing to the room. Everybody's kind of half ignoring it. Other stuff is happening, as opposed to Jedi Rocks, where everything focuses on this song.
Well, we should focus on the song so we don't talk about the dead hooker in the room.
Yeah. Well, except they show you more. Like, they shot more footage of her in the Rancor Pit that was not present. Because you don't, in the original, you just see her fall and you hear the noises and screams, but you don't see her panic. Right. You don't see any of that. So that's why it's like, it's more effective building up the Rancor. So not only do you downplay the sex slave you're killing and make her death less impactful, but you make the Rancor less scary.
I hate that. I absolutely hate the special edition of Jedi.
Yeah.
And I'm not even, and I mean, it's weird because Jedi keeps getting worse. As the years go, they keep finding new ways to make it worse. It's like, oh, get rid of the Ewok song, too. We'll add Jar Jar's voice. We'll add Aiden Christensen. We'll add... No!
I didn't mind the Christensen. I'm actually more bothered by the loss of the song Yub Nub than I am by the switch to Christensen.
I'm hugely bothered by the loss of Yub Nub. I love
Yub Nub.
Because the ending of the original cut of Jedi is intimate. It is small scale. It's beautiful. And by trying to make a big scale, you kill the movie.
Yeah, it's because it's all about these people who have just won this battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't need to know what the rest of the universe is doing. I care about these people, especially Luke, because he had a very personal thing happen to
him. Also, I don't believe that they immediately found out that the freaking Emperor died.
No, they wouldn't. In fact, in some ways, it even makes the original ending makes Force Awakens make more sense, because you have this universe where, even though the Emperor was defeated, the Empire had plenty of time to rally its forces somewhere else and start rebuilding.
Right.
Which they quite successfully did with the First Order.
Yeah. So, but, you know, that's just science. But so that's why I only accept the canon of the original trilogy, and I can't wait for better versions of the despecialized Empire and Jedi to come out.
Come on, Disney. We know you want to make money.
Well, it's this, like, whole thing. It's like, I've got to go, like, get some guy in the Czech Republic's edits of these movies to watch in high quality the movie that I want to watch. Like,
I'm just saying, if Disney were to decide to release a Blu-ray of the unedited original trilogy, I would drop money on it immediately.
Well, the problem is that Fox co-owns the pictures.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. But
if they can find a way.
Yeah.
They found a way.
Like, yeah. So it's, I rewatched the special editions, and then I watched the despecialized editions, both in, like, the last month. And so that's why walking into, but I watched the despecialized second. That's what I had in mind when I walked into this movie, and I loved every minute of, like, again, like, it's not like the best movie I've ever seen, but it's real Star Wars. It feels real. Everything feels like natural. Like, I know I've seen people complain about some of the CGI, like, faces on some characters, but I really don't know what they're talking about.
I thought Snoke looked like crap. I thought the tentacle monsters in the hallway also looked like crap. But, you know.
I thought those... See,
I can deal with that.
Can I just point out how many times that Ray saved Finn three times? Once when they're running away from the explosions and she like gets him conscious again.
Yeah.
And he asks if she's okay, which I also thought was funny.
That was really great.
The second time with the monsters on the ship where she saves them with the doors, where oh, Scott, it got me, but then the doors, that was lucky. which I love the fact that she doesn't take credit for saving Finn there. And then the third time when Finn's been taken down by Kylo Ren and she picks up the lightsaber and fights Ren and then drags, you know, Finn out of there. So I love those. I love the whole thing. I don't know if Rey's going to be a Skywalker or not. I think it would be more hilarious if she was related to Ben Kenobi.
That would be weird, but I'm, there's part of me that I'm kind of thinking that she might be Luke's kid.
Well, that's might the, be wrong, but that's what everybody thinks. And I think that's the obvious play. I think it would be more interesting if she was either descended from, like, if a good Jedi, like Kenobi's family. Obviously not Kenobi, because Jedi weren't allowed to have kids, which is the dumbest freaking thing ever, because apparently the Force runs in families. So why wouldn't you want your most powerful Force users to have kids? But whatever. And then...
because to build up another conflict episode two, Jedi can't love because we need it to be a forbidden romance because it needs to be forbidden.
But what I think would be the most interesting thing is if she was a descendant of Palpatine.
That'd be weird. I love it, but that would be weird.
Because I think that's the most interesting story that they could tell. But do you have anything else you want to talk about Star Wars?
Not beyond, I do enjoy this movie. I do recommend this movie. I look forward to seeing this movie again. I'm with you, Trey. It definitely wasn't the greatest ever. It wasn't even the best movie I saw this year. But yeah, Star Wars is back. Welcome back, Star Wars. I'm glad to have you. Keep on kicking butt and expect money from the Legos that I'm sure from this movie.
Yeah. It's yeah, I'll say like it's a real Star Wars movie. I haven't decided which one of the original trilogy I like it more than, but I like it more than the special editions of two of the movies from the original trilogy. So real Star Wars is back. I'm very excited to see Episode 8 in 2 years. I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with Rogue One next year, even if it is Star Wars overkill to have these spinoff movies while they're still making episodes.
I'm a little worried about that, but
Garrett Alan Tudyk's going to be in Rogue One, so...
Oh. Gareth Edwards is directing, which could be either really good or really bad. We'll find out.
I'll say the only spinoff film I'm actually really worried about is the Han Solo spinoff film.
Oh, God. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. I don't like that.
I don't like it either, but it's going to happen. And...
I got a bad feel about this.
Hey, at least it's Phil Lord and Chris Miller directing.
Okay, that's the closest thing to something to be happy about there.
Yeah. So, yeah, episode 7, overall, we loved it. I think love is the appropriate word.
Strongly liked. Maybe I didn't love. I definitely liked and recommend.
It awoke all my... You see, the problem with the Star Wars is that... And I know we sound like we're about to end the episode, but now I'm going to say this. With Star Wars, it's... I don't remember the first time I watched Star Wars. I honest to God... Like I always see these moments where like, people talk about like, oh, I remember watching Star Wars for the first time. No, I don't. I just always knew Star Wars. Like
people have that fandom that's been in their life so long they don't remember when it became part of their life.
I watched it too many times before I really could form cogent memories about like when things were happening. So I just always remember having seen this movie.
I do remember the first time I watched and comprehended A New Hope, but I know I had watched the movie several times.
But I also watched like the Ewoks cartoon while it was airing. So
I think I have a VHS tape of that.
Cause I was born in 1980. So I was 3 when the Ewoks cartoon was airing. So I was watching I had this knowledge of the Star Wars world as this thing, and I kind of I was born into this So, like, that's why, like, the I just have always, like, had, so deep down in my heart, when a film feels like a Star Wars movie, the fact that this movie hit it just right, like, it brought back all of my, like, all of that feeling of when I was 3 years old. But unlike, like, the special, like, the prequels, when those came out, and, like, you talk about how, like, everything feels different from, like, when you were a kid. Like, you didn't, like, people, like, that's usually the defense against, like, remakes or new stuff that I have, is that nothing's as awesome as it was when you watched it the first time when you were five.
Right.
This one kind of made me feel like I was five again.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
So,
that's,
like,
how I felt at Guardians of the Galaxy.
So, like, I can be critical.
I've had that here, too.
So I can be critical of this movie. It's not perfect, and I, you know, like, there are moments where I'm like, oh, well, that's, you know, dumb. But I'm, you know, but overall, it evoked that same emotion, and it's so rare that new installments in a franchise will evoke the same feeling in me that I saw it when I was a child. That's, I think that's the biggest accomplishment this film did, was feel right.
I agree. I totally agree with you.
So with that, I think it's time for us to start the ending music, because we've gone over an hour on a special.
Yep, sounds good to me.
So, folks, next week we will join you right after Christmas with we're not going to do news next week either. We're going to do our end of the year best of 2015 special.
Oh, yeah.
But it'll be an episode, so it'll have a number on it. So join me, Nick, and Fur for that. Hopefully all three of us will be together again.
We miss Fur.
Yeah. But I'm Trey Dorn.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
And he's got a catchphrase.
Keep on spockin' in the free world.
Which is the wrong franchise for this episode. Dance party. I love that image so much.
It really is great.
I admittedly, like, took that photo of myself specifically for that image. It's me making faces in my phone. Oh dear. Stopping the episode.